Hare Krishna.
Okay, today's the 16th of May, third session on Srila Prabhupada and health. Why don't you all come this way a little bit? Yeah, we'll spread out. Makes it easier for me because then I can direct my talks a little bit easily, more easily. Are you going to give me copies of all of this that you're recording, please? Thank you. Okay, so we were yesterday just about to start the section. We're talking about the specific illnesses that Prabhupada had to contend with whilst he was traveling and preaching. So I've already mentioned that one of the biggest problems that Prabhupada had was with his kidneys. And it wasn't very long after I joined Prabhupada's party in late November 1975 that I saw that problem manifested. Because when I first joined his party, I really didn't know very much, you know, about the different problems that Prabhupada had. Actually, when I first joined the party, I was told not to massage, I think it was his left knee, just for a few days, because he had just returned from a trip to South Africa, and he'd gone to Mauritius and also to Nairobi, Kenya. And whilst he was in Mauritius, he had a car crash. One afternoon, he just asked the devotees to take him out for a drive, and they were staying at the house of some big man, so he provided a car and a driver. Pushta Krishna Maharaj was in the front, Brahmananda was in the back with Srila Prabhupada, and then they were driving along, and they came to some bend in the road. Anyway, just before they got there, Prabhupada was sitting in the back seat, and then he suddenly took his cane and he kind of planted it very firmly in front of him, and then grabbed the handle with both hands, and he sat, you know, he just sat there cross-legged on the seat holding the cane like that. And then right after that, as they approached this bend in the road, this car came flying around from the other side on the wrong side of the road, and he hit them head on, and there was a huge wreck. It was quite a serious accident. The other driver was pretty seriously injured, and it turned out he was drunk, actually. But anyway, what happened was that Pushta Krishna was thrown forward and he banged his head in the windscreen, and Srila Prabhupada also was thrown forward and he banged his knee, so he was also injured. There was quite a lot of bruising, and Brahmananda had to carry him out of the car, and then there was another car coming, so he flagged him down and he got that driver to take them back. So then a few weeks, probably about 3 to 4 weeks later, that was when I came on the party, and Prabhupada was still having some problems with that knee from that accident, and he was treating that with a poultice of hot neem leaves boiled in hot ghee. He boiled them up and then just put them on as a poultice, just to draw out, you know, all the bruising and everything. So that was just for a few days. That was the first thing that I saw. Then 2 or 3 weeks later, then we went down to Bombay. So this is on December the 20th, 1975. Prabhupada is not feeling well. He has swelling in his legs, feet and hands. To see his body puffed up with fluid is very disturbing. Nevertheless, he went on his walk, continuing with the education of Dr. Patel and the other devotees. During his massage, I pressed gently on Prabhupada's foot with my thumb to show him the swelling. So I was massaging and his foot was kind of puffed up. So I pressed down on it and it left an indentation, maybe a quarter of an inch deep. And it stayed there for several minutes. There's so much fluid. So I showed that to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada just kind of smiled. He said this is due to uremia, a toxic condition caused by waste products in the blood, which are normally eliminated in the urine. It makes it very difficult for him to climb the steps to his apartment when he's returning from the temple. Yet he tolerates the inconvenience without any complaints, and he dismissed the sight of the dent with a smile and a shake of his head. So he didn't... I mean, he had to tolerate it. That was all there was that he could do. So then the next day, there was no more morning walk again today. And missing Prabhupada on the beach, Dr. Patel arrived at his apartment with his son. He took a cardiograph reading and gave Prabhupada some pills. His diagnosis was high blood pressure. Prabhupada rested. He didn't take breakfast, and then he ate only a morsel for lunch. And he was complaining of dizziness from the medicine. So he took the pills, which was a little unusual for Prabhupada. If a doctor gave some medicine, usually he would let them give it, and then when they'd gone, he would just discard it. But he actually took the pills because Dr. Patel was there. Anyway, then he started complaining that the pills were making him dizzy. He remarked that modern drugs are medicines for the demons. Prabhupada rarely goes to a doctor, although if by some arrangement one comes to him, he doesn't refuse their help. Disease has to be treated, of course, but as far as he is concerned, chanting Hare Krishna is the best cure. So then, 2 days later, December the 23rd, Prabhupada is feeling stronger and the swelling in his body has gone down because of the diuretic pills that Dr. Patel had supplied the day before. But Prabhupada didn't take all of the pills prescribed. After only taking half a tablet, as soon as he got the desired effect, he stopped taking the medication. So we did keep those diuretic pills with us. And I think the next occasion that Prabhupada used those was a few months later in May when we had arrived in Hawaii. So I mentioned a little bit yesterday about how Prabhupada increased the volume of his work, you know, on his books whilst we were at that 1 month in Hawaii. He was writing about 6 or 7 times what he normally wrote. Plus he was working on this other book, the philosophy book, for 2 or 3 hours a day. But at the same time, he was also experiencing some problems. And I think I mentioned that he called us in and told us that he wouldn't be going on his morning walk. Then he began to preach to us at 1 o'clock in the morning. So this was May the 8th then, 1976. Prabhupada was in Honolulu at the temple there. Prabhupada is now feeling a little better. For the last couple of days, he's been taking half tablets of the diuretic medicine, and the swelling in his hands and feet has disappeared. As soon as he got the desired effect, then he stopped taking the pills. So then, the next time it became a serious problem was on July the 11th. Prabhupada had just arrived in New York. At that time we had a big 11-story building on West 55th Street, and we'd only had it a few months at this point, less than a year. So it was Prabhupada's one and only visit to that building, and he had his quarters up on the top floor, on the 11th floor. But it was a fabulous facility, right midtown Manhattan. And so on the 11th, and we arrived there on the 9th, then on the 11th, Prabhupada's servant's bell rang at 2:15 a.m. I jumped out of my sleeping bag, entered his sitting room, and offered my obeisances. I looked up at Prabhupada sitting at his desk, but he wasn't working, and he looked very ill. He was gaunt, and he complained of severe chest pains and an inability to either rest or work. He has already changed his diet to simple khichdi because of these problems. But the symptoms have persisted. Seeing Prabhupada in this condition is very trying, because there's nothing that any of us can do to alleviate his problem. Although he called me in to tell me that something was wrong, I couldn't suggest any remedy, and nor did he ask me to do anything to try to relieve the condition. So he just called me in just to tell me I can't work and I can't rest either. Then after a few minutes, he sent me out again. So we are helpless in this situation. Prabhupada has little faith that a doctor can do anything, and he prefers to simply rely on Krishna. That is a special relationship to which we can only be observers. So then, 4 days later, July 15th, Prabhupada had gone on the Radha Damodar bus to Gita Nagari, because in those days it wasn't called Gita Nagari. It was the Pennsylvania farm. It was about 5 hours drive. And the Radha Damodar party was a party of about 100 brahmacharis. And they had 6 or 7 greyhound buses, which they had converted into traveling temples. And they used to travel all over America. And they would distribute tens of thousands of books every month, practically. So Prabhupada was invited to drive down to the Pennsylvania farm. And he did so. Then, in the middle of the night, we stayed there overnight, and we were coming back to New York the next day. So in the middle of the night, Prabhupada rang his bell. When I entered his room, he was sitting behind his low desk with his dictaphone before him, but he was not using it. He was ashen. And he told me that he was experiencing severe kidney pain and he could not translate. It was the same problem that he had had a few days ago. This time, he agreed when I asked if we could call a doctor on our return to New York. He wasn't confident that it would do any good, but he said that there was undoubtedly something wrong, and so he had no objection. So this means it's serious. Otherwise, Prabhupada would not have agreed to have medical help. So the next day, on the 16th, we arrived in New York. Upon our return from the farm, the devotees had contacted a Gujarati doctor, Dr. Bhagat, who is a life member. He arrived just after Prabhupada had had an interview with API in the morning, and then just after that, the doctor arrived. So he examined Srila Prabhupada, and he diagnosed very high blood pressure and a weak heart. And he said that the uremia problem, which makes Prabhupada's hands and feet swell, means that his body is producing too much water, and this was probably as the result of a kidney stone. So he prescribed 5 different kinds of medicines. Lasix, which is a diuretic to eliminate the excess water, which was to be taken once a day with breakfast. Curflex, an antibiotic to fight the kidney infection, which was to be ingested 4 times a day. Parafon Forte, which was a pain reliever. Valium, a psychotropic relaxant, and a sleeping pill. So this was, 5 different kinds of medicines. He also advised Prabhupada not to take any salt or sugar. Prabhupada allowed us to purchase the medicines, but I have strong doubts that he will take them. And I know that he will never agree to a diet without salt. He always insists that there must be some taste to his prasadam, otherwise he won't eat it. So the next day, July the 17th, Prabhupada has refused either to adjust his diet or take the different medicines. He said that the anxieties of managing ISKCON are the real cause of his pain and that the GBC should learn how to relieve him of it. So that was his diagnosis. And I had all the pills there, and Prabhupada said, just chant Hare Krishna. So that was July. Then August, from New York, we went to London. Prabhupada got very sick when we were on the flight going over, and he was in bed for about 3 days when we first arrived in London. Then he kind of recovered, and then we went to France, and from France then we went to Tehran in Iran. And we had a nice center there at that time. And Prabhupada stayed for about a week. So this was on August the 8th. Prabhupada spent a quiet day following his usual routine while Satraya Rishi and Dayananda Prabhus went off to work in the afternoon. Despite the high altitude causing swelling in Prabhupada's legs and hands again from his uremia, he has decided to stay in Iran until the 13th of the month because the climate here is very nice. It is sunny and hot, around 90 degrees. So immediately we got to Tehran, and then the high altitude again caused problems with this uremia. Then August the 11th, we're still in Iran. This was Balaram's appearance day. So actually it was the day before, but we missed it. It was a small yatra, and in those days we didn't have, you know, these Vaishnav calendars that we, you know, you have it on your computer and it pops up every day, but in those days we didn't. It was just all hand done. So somewhere or another the devotees spaced out and we missed Balaram's appearance day. So on the 11th of August, Prabhupada made us observe the fast that day. So everybody observed a belated fast for Lord Balaram's appearance and held a small feast in the afternoon. Srila Prabhupada took his regular meals though. His health is always bad, and even to miss one meal will be very detrimental to his body. So because of his ill health, then Prabhupada decided not to observe the fast on that particular day. Then on the 13th, we flew back to Bombay. We got there in the evening. And then the next morning, Dr. Patel, Prabhupada's Bombay walking partner, showed up early in the morning with his raucous laugh and lively demeanor, bare feet and cane, to go out onto Juhu Beach to walk with Srila Prabhupada. However, because of the persistent swelling in Prabhupada's legs caused by his malfunctioning kidneys, he wasn't feeling up to it. But he happily spent the next half hour preaching. And that was the occasion when Prabhupada told Dr. Patel what his philosophy was about, you know, illness and medicine. That personally he said, it's my choice. I don't like to take medicine. I just chant Hare Krishna. So that was that day. So that was August. Then there were a few things that happened in between, but then next time this uremia problem came up again. This was on December the 28th, 1976, and Prabhupada was in Bombay. So since we've been here in Bombay, Prabhupada has been complaining again about his kidneys and the swelling in his legs. Dr. Patel has been coming each morning to walk on the roof, and he told him that he has arranged for another doctor to come and take some blood and urine samples. It seems that he had mentioned it a few days ago to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had agreed at that time. But today he said that he didn't think that he would bother. Immediately Dr. Patel became agitated and began insisting very loudly, "Oh, you're letting me down. You've gone against your word. I've gone to so much trouble to bring this man to you." So he was actually trying to chastise Srila Prabhupada and make him feel obliged to do what he asked. All the devotees that were present on the morning walk became very upset at his speaking to Srila Prabhupada in such a way, and they began to tell him to keep quiet. So then Dr. Patel got agitated with the devotees, and then he complained to Srila Prabhupada, "All these young boys," he said, "I'm a respectable older gentleman, I'm a doctor, then, you know, they shouldn't be talking to me like this. So it got a little bit acrimonious. And to keep the peace, more than for any other reason, Prabhupada agreed to allow Dr. Patel to bring his other doctor friend to see him. So at 8:30 a.m., they came into Prabhupada's quarters. And what Dr. Patel did, because he knew that we weren't particularly favorable, you know, especially for them to take blood samples from Srila Prabhupada, stick him with needles and things. So what he did was that he came in and he saw that I was in the kitchen. So he and this doctor slipped into Prabhupada's sitting room, and as soon as they went in, he shut the doors behind him and locked them so that I couldn't get in. And then he had his half hour with Prabhupada in his sitting room there, and they took their blood samples and then off they went. So after they left, then I asked Srila Prabhupada about that incident. And he said, "Well," he said, "I don't care for medicine, but there is some disease undoubtedly. So I took it as Krishna's mercy. Well, this man has come. All right, let him do what he wants." So at the same time though, Prabhupada several times told Dr. Patel that I want to die without medicine. So around about the same time, whilst we were there in Bombay, because that was Dr. Patel, he was allopathic. And they did do their blood tests, and then he came and brought the results a few days later, and it did show very clearly that he had kidney disease. So around about the same time, on December the 27th, then one big Ayurvedic Kaviraj was brought to see Srila Prabhupada. I guess the devotees had gone off and they knew this man, and so they brought him. So after speaking with Srila Prabhupada, then Prabhupada set off by car. He took me with him, and we went off in this man's car to his house and then to his clinic. It was a long drive to the other side of Bombay. The man's house was a very small flat in a block of flats with tiny cramped up rooms. I mean, I remember they were minuscule. His whole family was living there, and the whole flat was probably about, you know, half the size of this temple room. And he had his whole family in little tiny rooms like this. So we had to wait there for a few minutes, and then again we got in the car, and then we went off to the man's clinic, which was another, you know, half an hour's drive or so. So Prabhupada commented, he said, they are paying thousands of rupees for this horrible place. He said, actually later on he made a comment, he said, I offered this man that you come and live on our farm in Hyderabad and you start a clinic, Ayurvedic clinic. He said, but still they're so attached. He said he won't leave. Even he's living in such horrible conditions. He said, this is Kali Yuga. So anyway, we got to the clinic. It turned out to be the man's father's house, and it was again a small place. As we walked in, I noticed that there was a dog sleeping underneath the bed. I wasn't really impressed with the standards of cleanliness. I mean, in India, still, it's unusual to see people have dogs inside their house. Anyway, so Prabhupada was offered a seat, and after some time, the father and son consulted, and they prescribed different medicines and diet for Srila Prabhupada to take. The diet consisted of simply boiled rice and certain fruits, dalia, that's cracked wheat, as well as a quarter of a liter of milk, to be taken three times a day, plus four types of pills to be taken twice a day. From there, we visited an Ayurvedic pharmacy belonging to the father, who is very old, to get the medicines, and then we returned to the temple. As Prabhupada sat down, I asked him if he would actually follow the diet. Well, we got out, taking so much trouble, driving all over Bombay practically. It was 2 or 3 hours by the time we got back. And then when Prabhupada sat down, I thought, now I wonder if he's really going to take this seriously or not. So I asked him, do you really want us to make this diet? And Prabhupada shook his head and he said laughingly, I eat what I like. Even as a boy, I would only eat what I like, nothing else. You can offer me thousands of preparations, but I'll only eat what I like. So that was it. I mean, I knew there was no question in following this boiled rice diet. And then he took the pills once and then abandoned them. So this is even Ayurvedic medicine. So during the massage, he began to comment on what nasty conditions people are living in. Small houses, all broken down. And he said this is the middle class, not to speak about the general workers. He said he had offered this Kaviraj the opportunity to go and live in our Hyderabad farm with his whole family and set up a complete pharmacy there, but the man had declined. The whole family is practically living in one tiny room, but still they won't move. Prabhupada condemned this horrible city life as a good example of what Kali Yuga means. It is so bad, he said, that a man cannot even trust his own wife anymore, want to speak about anybody else. So then a couple of days later, December the 30th, another doctor came. So in the evening, one Dr. Shiv Sharma, another Kaviraj, came. He was actually an impressive man. Although he was late in years, about 73 or 74, he had a very sharp and attentive mind, and he knows his business. He has lectured in various countries about Ayurvedic medicines, and he came to see if he could help Srila Prabhupada. He was shown the results of the blood test, which arrived this morning, so that we got back from Dr. Patel. And after doing his examination of Srila Prabhupada, he told him that practically everything is all right, except that one kidney is badly diseased. So he advised that he should not take any fat, ghee, or salt. And he gave certain medicines and told Prabhupada that he should rest completely for at least 2 weeks and not speak with anyone. Another impossible. And he should not fly anymore. That going up and coming down in the aeroplanes, the pressure, said this is not good for you because he had high blood pressure. So Prabhupada has agreed at least tentatively to follow his recommendations. That was the 30th. Then on the 31st, Prabhupada is attempting to follow the diet, but he is still taking ghee. He was told no ghee, no fat, no salt. He's still taking ghee. After a lunch of boiled food, he complained that he cannot eat without salt or ghee. He said eating boiled food is the same as starving. I tried to persuade him, but Srila Prabhupada, if you can just cut out the ghee, then you may get a little better. Otherwise, if you continue with it, your kidney is going to become very bad. Then I shall die. What is that? Better to die by eating. If I starve, then I shall also die. So if you set before me a plate of boiled food, it is starving. I cannot eat it. So that was it. He said, better to die by eating. He also complained that the medicine is taking away his appetite. So it looks like it will continue in the way that he always has. Prabhupada doesn't appear to be too much bothered by any sickness that he gets. He seems resigned to the fact that his body is very old and that it's not going to last very much longer, no matter what adjustments are made. So why should he put himself to any unnecessary discomfort just to prolong his bodily existence? So that was the kidney problems. And of course, 1977, when Prabhupada, got that basically what turned out to be his final illness, it was prolonged from Mayapur festival onwards. The kidneys were the main cause of all of those problems. That was diagnosed by several doctors. When Prabhupada went to London, as I mentioned, then he had that problem with passing urine. But that doctor also, McGregor, he gave a diagnosis. He said the same thing. Kidneys finished. Well, at least one kidney was finished. Like that. So, anyway, that was one ongoing problem. Kidney problem. Then another thing that I saw that Prabhupada had continually, coming and going all the time that I was with him, was toothache. Anybody here ever had toothache? Yeah. And what was it like? Very bad. Very bad. Yeah. If you get toothache, that's it. You can't do anything practically, you can't think even, because it's all in your head. Anyway, so Prabhupada also had a lot of problems with his teeth. So when we had gone to, when I first joined Prabhupada's party, we were in Vrindavan, and I just moved into his rooms, and so one of my duties was that when Prabhupada finished eating, then I would come in, he would ring the bell when he'd finished, so I would come in, collect the plates up and everything, and then I would wipe the small table that he was eating from. And Prabhupada would always clean his teeth with a toothpick after he'd been eating. So as I was wiping up the table, Prabhupada would poke his teeth with a toothpick and he would spit out all the bits of prasadam and I'd wipe them up. So the first time that I did this close up, I looked to see Prabhupada poking his teeth with the toothpick, and I saw his teeth were moving apart like this. As he pushed the stick in, the teeth were actually moving apart. They were all loose. I was very surprised. And, Prabhupada saw me looking, and then he just laughed. So later on, about 2 weeks later, when we got down to Bombay, we were on a morning walk. And something came up about Prabhupada's teeth. So pausing for a moment, he recalled his recent trip to Africa. So he said, in Mauritius, I was suffering so much from dental pain, but I never went to the dentist. I invented my medicine and it cured. So that was one of the first duties that Harikesh, he was on the party when I joined, and then one of the first duties that I got was to make a batch of toothpaste for Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada actually made his own recipe, because he was a pharmacist, he knew all these things. So he had, in Mauritius, he'd had Harikesh make up his own toothpaste, and various ingredients. They ground it all up. And then it was from that point on that Prabhupada started using a toothbrush. Previous to that, his whole life, Prabhupada had used twigs, traditional Indian, in the villages. But Prabhupada was a city boy, but even there, they would simply take twigs, from the neem tree especially. And you just chew it and then rub like this and chew it. And because it's antiseptic, then it keeps your teeth clean and, disease free. So Prabhupada's whole life he was using twigs. And there were a couple of occasions when I saw that. One was when he came to Melbourne in 1973. Srutakirti Prabhu was Prabhupada's servant at that time. And, because I'd been in the movement about a year at that time. And just after Prabhupada arrived, then Srutakirti came out and he asked, does anybody have, any gum tree twigs? So we had to run around the neighborhood trying to find a gum tree so that we could get some twigs for Prabhupada to use for his teeth. Then in 1975, I had made my first trip to India. And all the Australian devotees, we had volunteered to do some service there in Mayapur, cleaning and like that in the early morning. So I was given the assignment of cleaning Prabhupada's bathrooms. So when I went into the bathroom, I saw on the sink, there's this twig there, and it's all chewed up on one end. So I knew what it was. I knew Prabhupada had been using this, to do his teeth. So I thought, wow, great, here's an old twig that Prabhupada's been using. So I immediately got it, and I started chewing it and cleaning my teeth with it. And then one of the ladies that was senior girls that was there, Nandarani, she just happened to walk into the bathroom just as I was, poking my mouth out with Prabhupada's toothbrush. And she said, what are you doing? She said, that's Prabhupada's. You can't use that. He's still using it. I thought because it was chewed up at one end, then it was finished with. But of course, Prabhupada was just chewing it down, Anyway, so that was my other experience with the twigs. But then at the end of 75, when Prabhupada was in Mauritius, that was when he stopped using the twigs anymore because his teeth actually became so painful that he couldn't chew them anymore. So he switched and he made his own toothpaste and he started using a brush. And that was one of the first duties that I had was making up a new batch of toothpaste. So now on this morning walk in Bombay, Prabhupada mentioned that he said, I invented my medicine and it is cured. So whatever tooth problem he had from using his own toothpaste, it fixed it up. So everybody smiled in admiration. Prabhupada seems to know nearly everything. He was referring to his own toothpaste recipe. It's a combination of ground mustard seed, salt, calcium carbonate, eucalyptus oil, camphor, menthol, and oil of wintergreen. Many devotees are now eagerly making it for themselves, and Prabhupada asked if they liked it. He grinned when Harikesh assured him, oh yes, it's the best. So we were telling everybody, and all the devotees were making up their own toothpaste. You can still get Prabhupada's recipe. My godbrother, Hari Vilas Prabhu, he's in Seattle, and he has a company called Uncle Harry's. So he makes Prabhupada's formula toothpaste, but he makes it as a dry powder, whereas we used to make it, kind of a little damp, more like a paste, but not quite like the, stuff that you buy in the shops. It's kind of halfway between. So later on, when we went on the last world tour in 76, then the tooth problems came back again. So June 15th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Detroit. And we'd gone out every day. He was going on a walk in this area called Belle Isle. And this particular day, June 15th, Prabhupada started complaining that he was having toothache, but still he went out on his walk. Next day we flew to Toronto, which is just over the Great Lakes there. It's not very far actually from Detroit. So on June 17th, by this time Prabhupada's toothache became really bad. So his toothache is far worse. His face is beginning to swell out, and he didn't take much for his breakfast. Jagadish asked him if he had a headache. Prabhupada shook his head. He said, "No, but there is some pain." He said, "My teeth are now useless. So it is all rotten now. Sometimes it becomes acute. So there is no strength in the teeth. Some of them, 50%, have already fallen, and therefore I cannot eat." So sometimes it was becoming just too much. So far, Prabhupada hasn't taken any remedial measure. He is simply tolerating the pain. I asked him a little later if we could get a painkiller or something from India, but he refused. He said, "No, don't worry, it will be all right." So then the next day, on June the 18th, after taking breakfast, Prabhupada slept until noon. His face is now badly swollen, and he has a severe toothache, but he refuses to visit a dentist. "Better to let it fall out by itself," he said, "because a dentist will simply want to extract all of them." I asked him, "Can we go get a dentist to come?" He said, "No." He said, "If a dentist comes, he'll simply want to take them all out." He said, "Better to let them go one by one, as they like." He's simply sucking an occasional clove to help deaden the pain. It is yet another amazing display of his bodily detachment. Any ordinary man would be in agony, completely disturbed mentally, and complaining all the time. But Prabhupada simply sits quietly and tolerates it without so much as a murmur. Then later on, because it was Friday evening, and because of Prabhupada's presence, there was a good turnout from the Indian community for the initiation ceremonies. So despite the discomfort from his toothache, Prabhupada spoke strongly for 20 minutes from the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev on the importance of using the human form to rise above the animal tendencies to the platform of brahminical life by the process of tapasya. So he just went on with the program. He took all that extra rest in the morning, but when there was a demand to go out into public, he went out. His whole face was swollen with toothache, but still he spoke. Then the next day, June the 19th, Prabhupada's face is still quite swollen from the bad tooth, but he has not mentioned the problem except when somebody else brings it to his attention. He remains tolerant and transcendental and does not allow his preaching schedule to be affected in any way. Then later on, Prabhupada was invited to go and visit the house of one of our Indian devotees, and his name was Subhavilas. So Prabhupada drove out there just after his afternoon nap. The drive took a half an hour. There was a big gathering of devotees, maybe 90 or 100, who were there to greet him at the Subhavilas' house in Scarborough. Because of the swelling in his mouth, Prabhupada had the devotees first perform kirtan, and then he requested the sannyasis and GBCs to say a few words instead of having to speak himself. So then after a few days, that kind of gradually went down. From Toronto, we then flew to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh we went to New Vrindavan. So June 23rd, 1976, in New Vrindavan, it was a codicil. Prabhupada said very little on his morning walk, and his class was short. He's experiencing disturbing heart palpitations, and his uremia has caused his legs and feet to swell again, and it was a strain for him to be even out. Thankfully, his toothache seems to have disappeared, and his face is no longer swollen. During the day, he rested a lot and didn't see anyone. So he had for about a week, he had really severe tooth pain. But all he did was just suck some cloves, and that was it. That was June. Then about a month later, then we arrived in London. So on July 24th, because what happened was Pushtakrishna, he had been Prabhupada's secretary. He came on the party in Mayapur at Gaupunima time in February or March of 1976. He stayed on the party for 4 months. Then when we left New York in late July, he decided to leave the party and he wanted to go off and do his own preaching. So we flew to London, and then Harry Cash, who had previously been on the party in 1975, and then he took sannyas in February of 76 and was sent off preaching in Eastern Europe. So he came back on when we got arrived in London to become Prabhupada's secretary. So he was shocked to see Prabhupada was missing a tooth since the last time that he had seen him, and he asked him what had happened. I presume that it was the tooth that had given him so much trouble in Toronto, but Prabhupada hadn't ever mentioned it. To Hari Kesha's query, he simply laughed. He said, "My teeth are all rotten and they want to fall out, but on account of this toothpaste, they're being forced to stay in." Prabhupada's fortitude is inconceivable. What ordinary man could endure the pain and loss of a whole tooth and not even mention a word of it? So that was July. About a month later, August, in Bombay. This was August the 15th. So we arrived on the 13th night. We had the 14th. That was when Dr. Patel came. Then on the 15th morning, Prabhupada rang his buzzer early in the morning. It was about 5 o'clock. I entered his room, offered my obeisances and looked up, and got a shock. Prabhupada was smiling, revealing a gap in his mouth where his tooth should have been. With mixed dismay and surprise, I asked him, "Srila Prabhupada, what happened to your tooth?" Without saying anything, Prabhupada reached down and pulled open the drawer of his desk. The tooth was lying inside. During the night, it had either fallen out or Srila Prabhupada had pulled it out. He had simply put it in the drawer and then gone on with his work. I was both amazed and concerned. Another tooth gone, and Prabhupada had not said a word. But then, as I sat before him, another thought flashed into my mind. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I recall that because Maharaj Prataparudra was unable to personally associate with Lord Chaitanya, he had obtained a piece of the Lord's clothing, which he worshipped as if it was Lord Chaitanya himself. It occurred to me that at some point in the future, my personal service to Srila Prabhupada would stop. However, if I had his tooth, I could worship it and get the same benefit. But I was torn, because I knew full well that the spiritual master is never to be asked for anything. That was one of the first things that Hari Kesh drummed into my head when I came on the party, that, you know, you're in a special privileged position. So Prabhupada has all his paraphernalia. You have to look after it. People give so many things to Prabhupada, he may not use them. Or he may use them once and then put them, you know, away. So, you know, there's the opportunity there to get a lot of Prabhupada's personal paraphernalia, similarly with the Mahaprasadam, etc. So he was very careful to drill it into me that you never ask the spiritual master for anything. You're here to serve Prabhupada and not take from him. So we knew that full well. But anyway, so I saw this tooth was lying in this drawer, and I started thinking, you know, maybe if I had that tooth. But then at the same time, I had this other conflict going on, not to ask. But at the same time, I realized that within a second or two, Prabhupada was going to close the drawer and the teeth would disappear into the bowels of the desk and probably be never seen again. I mean, once it was in there, then that would be it. Maybe we'd go away and it would just lie in the desk and nobody would know about it. Maybe it was, you know, become lost or whatever. So I made a snap decision, and I hope that I wasn't being offensive. Srila Prabhupada, do you think that I could have that tooth? Prabhupada didn't say a word. Reaching into the drawer, he picked the tooth up, and with a smile, he dropped it into my hand. I was in ecstasy, naturally enough. With relief and excitement surging through me, I offered my obeisances and returned to my room, eager to give it a closer inspection. The tooth, a lower canine, is astonishing. There is a huge cavity that has eaten away more than half of the tooth at that point where the tooth enters into the gum. Bits of prasadam, spices and the like, are lodged inside it as if some squirrel had stored them away for a rainy day. How many more of his teeth must be in the same condition, I can only speculate. And how Prabhupada is able to tolerate such a condition is inconceivable. So literally half the tooth had been eaten away and it was still in his mouth. And Prabhupada didn't do anything. He had no, you know, dentist look at it or anything. And either it fell out or he pulled it out. That was it. He just went on with his work. So I've carefully put the bag in, the tooth in a bag with other pieces of his paraphernalia. When the right time comes, I shall worship it and thus keep up my direct service to His Divine Grace's transcendental body. I actually have that tooth. It's across the road. I travel with it and I do puja every day to it. So now, interestingly enough, I was in Bombay about a year ago and I met Shyamasunda Prabhu, the original Shyamasunda that joined in 67. And he told me the story of how Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he had a tooth of Prabhupada's, and he told me how they got that tooth. So they were flying to Japan. So Prabhupada was sitting and then Shyamasunda was next to him and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was next to him. And he turned round and he was surprised to see Prabhupada had his hand in his mouth. Now Prabhupada never put his hands in his mouth even when he was eating. You know, we eat with our hands, but he would kind of pop the prasadam into his mouth because it's muchi to put your hands near your mouth. So Prabhupada rarely did that, but he was surprised. He got, Prabhupada had his hands, his fingers right inside his mouth, and he's kind of moving it around. And all of a sudden, he said he just pulled it out, and a tooth came out. So the tooth was giving him a problem. He just ripped it out right there on the plane. And then he turned around, and he dropped it into Shyamasunda's hand. That was it. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was sat next to Shyamasunda. He was watching what was going on and he saw Prabhupada drop this tooth into his hand. So, you know, he just couldn't resist. He said, hey, you know, can I have that? So Shyamasunda told me, he said, I wasn't attached. So he said, I just gave it to him. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj had that tooth. And of course, you know, he wore it around his neck for a long time. He was put into samadhi with it also. So there are a few teeth. I saw one of the of Prabhupada's tooth in LA when I was living there in 1991-92. There was one German devotee that was living in the community there that I was friends with, Padmagaba. One night I hear this banging on my door and Padmagaba comes running in and he's got he was so excited he could hardly talk. He had a box, and in the box he had a pair of Prabhupada's shoes. He had Prabhupada's cartels, and they were the same cartels that I had carried around the world with us. You know, every day Prabhupada would sing Jai Radha Madhava and I would have his cartels there ready for him to play. And he had a tooth, one of Prabhupada's teeth. I had no idea that it was even in existence, but somebody had gotten this tooth and for some reason or another they decided to sell it. So Padmagaba had paid $2,000 and he bought these shoes and the cartels and the tooth. So I was amazed to see this tooth. I don't know where it is right now. I guess he still has it, but anyway, so there are one or two around. And the only other one that I know about, or I think I know about, is that I was told that when they built Prabhupada's palace in New Vrindavan, that Kirtanananda Maharaj had a tooth that he placed underneath Prabhupada's murti in Prabhupada's palace. I still haven't got that confirmed. I keep meaning to do it and I forget about it. But that was the only other one that I know about. Then the only other thing about Prabhupada's teeth that I know was that because he had a lot of gold work that was done, and apparently that was done maybe in 1970 or 71, either in Japan or in London. But the devotees somehow or another persuaded him to have his teeth fixed up, and he had a lot of gold work done, and apparently afterwards Prabhupada said never again. It was such a, you know, performance, just having all its, you know, you have to sit down, keep your mouth open for hours, you know, practically cracks your jaw. And probably was such a, you know, such a difficult experience. Prabhupada said never again like that. Anyway, so we've already talked about. I mentioned about him using neem twigs and then switching over. So Prabhupada mentioned this himself one time. That was in September of 75. So this was after he lost that tooth in Bombay. So this was September the 5th. Prabhupada arrived in, we've been in Vrindavan a couple of days. So Prabhupada, you know, I mentioned that he used to get right into every detail of the management in India, because we were all Westerners, most of us, and we hadn't got a clue what we were doing. I mean, even in the West we didn't have much idea, but in India we had no idea whatsoever. So Prabhupada had to train us up how to do everything. And so Prabhupada was so determined to cut the expenses in the temple that he even went so far as to say that soap and toothpaste were not required. He said, "Why soap?" I was being a bit sarcastic here. Some of the devotees used to like to go and act like they were Babaji's. You know, they come to Vrindavan, they get all sentimental, and then the next thing we hear, they've disappeared, they've gone off to live in Radhakund. And Prabhupada used to object very strongly to our devotees going and living in Radhakund, as if they're big Babaji's. You know, he said that's for the liberated souls. So he was complaining here about the expenses. He said, "So why use soap?" He said, "You're such a devotee of Radhakund. Why do you require soap? They're going to Radhakund or to Narakakund." That means hell. Narak means hell. So this is nonsense. You can take the earth from Radhakund or Vrindavan, this Vrindavan Duli. So why do you require soap? Neem dantan, that means neem twigs. Dantan, Bengali, means teeth. So neem dantan means brushing with the neem twigs. He said, "I was doing neem dantan until my teeth fell out. You know that I was collecting this neem, but now it is impossible. So that also, now I have manufactured my own toothpaste. So even in my young days, I never used," means this commercial stuff. "You have seen it practically. Not that now, only because I've become a sannyasi, I'm doing this." So he's saying, why do you want to buy toothpaste? They're not necessary. Just use some neem. You know, or make your own toothpaste. "So when I was a grihastha, I never used this commercial stuff. So if you cannot use this neem dantan, you can use this paste," means his formula. "I will tell you the formula for my toothpaste. It is very simple." So that was a Prabhupada talking about his own. So then this neem tooth powder, August 12th, 1976, when we were in Tehran, I had again to make up a new batch of Prabhupada's tooth powder or toothpaste. So as we prepared to go, Srila Prabhupada went over some of, we were just leaving, so he went over some of the details, how to make his toothpaste, with Hari Kesh, who had been the first one to make it for him. Hari Kesh laughed at the suggestion that they use some bitter neem powder instead of calcium carbonate. So Prabhupada was adjusting the formula, so he thought, instead of putting calcium carbonate, just powder up some neem and we'll put that in and see how that goes. That will be, you know, very antiseptic. He didn't think that anybody would be able to tolerate the taste. Hari Kesh was saying, if you put neem in it, who's going to use it? I mean, you may use it, but nobody else will. So I reminded Srila Prabhupada of what he had said in London about his toothpaste. I said, "You said that your teeth were so rotten that they want to fall out, but the toothpaste won't allow them." Prabhupada grinned. He said, "Yes, actually," he said, "my teeth have all gone bad. It is useless. But on account of this toothpaste, it is still working." He gave a laugh. "Otherwise, according to dental science, it has to be extracted. There's no other remedy. If you go to the dentist, then he'll simply will say, immediately extract all of these and have a new set, artificial." I knew that was a fact, actually, because my dad had problems with his teeth when he was about 48 or 49. And then one day he came in and he had no teeth. He'd gone to the dentist and the dentist had persuaded him better to take them all out and have a set of false ones. So he had all of his teeth taken out. And then he had, you know, used to keep his teeth in a glass by the table. So he said, anyway, that I know, but I don't want to extract as far as possible, use them, and then let them fall out automatically, as they have already so many fallen out. 50% have already fallen out. Another 25% are shaking, and still I am eating. Otherwise, according to the dental science, I should not eat any salt. In Bengal, there is a word that when the teeth is rotten, then your eating is gone. You cannot digest, you cannot eat. If the foodstuff is not properly chewed, then it causes this digestive disturbance. Digestive disturbance means so many diseases will come from that. So this coughing, he had a lot of cough. He said, this is digestive disturbance. I know that. Is that because the liver is not working? I asked, remembering the doctor's opinion in New York. Prabhupada agreed. Yes, he said, this is old man's disease. Liver does not work nicely. Teeth does not work nicely. And there is susceptibility to cold. All of my young friends, they have all now died. Nobody is living. Maybe one or two still. You know, that Dinanath. So he was talking about one of his childhood friends, Dinanath. He had come to see Prabhupada when we were in Calcutta at the beginning of the year. And Prabhupada had sent me with him to inspect a flat that he was buying for his former family. So anyway, now he was referring to Dinanath. He said, you know that Dinanath Khan? I think you know. So he's living. He is 75, 76, but he's a little younger than me. So Prabhupada was making the point that now all my friends have died. You know, all of his contemporaries. This man was a little bit younger brother. So that was the teeth. Now, see there, Prabhupada mentioned about cough. So that was another problem that he had. If you have too much mucus, and especially, he said, you know, for an old man, that's also very dangerous. And I'll explain that in a minute. So on July the 1st, 1976, Prabhupada didn't take a walk today, and his Srimad Bhagavatam discourse lasted only 15 minutes. He is still weak, and he is congested with mucus. Then on July the 4th, that was in New Vrindavan. Then on July the 4th, 1976, we'd gone to Washington, D.C. That year was special. It was the 200th anniversary, 1776, 1976. So it was the bicentennial of American independence. So the devotees thought it would be nice for Prabhupada, you know, to visit Washington during the July the 4th festival. And it was actually turned out to be very good, because we actually went down into the city in the afternoon just to, you know, see the festivities. There are about a million and a half people packed into the area that's called the Mall, which is in front of, you know, the Capitol building and everything. There's this huge park. About a million people were there, and there was promised to be this huge fireworks display. So the devotees had asked Prabhupada, shall we go down? Would you like to go down and see the festivities? So Prabhupada said, all right, why not? So, you know, we got in the car, and then a whole convoy of vehicles, about 10 vehicles, went from the... our temple is in Potomac, which is up in the hills. So there's kind of like a gradually winding road going down into the city. And all along the route, we saw there were thousands of people. And many people decided not to go into the city because they knew after the fireworks are over, how are you going to get out? There's another million people trying to do the same thing. So many people, they parked on the side of the road in the hills up above, figuring that, well, at least we'll see the fireworks. So as we were going down, I noted, you know, there's so many people here. And we had had a letter from, I think, Adi Keshava in New York. He was the temple president there. And he had described devotees had got this flatbed truck. Yeah, a big truck, but with just a flatbed on the back. And the devotees, they had a kirtan party, and they would simply sit on the truck and then drive around New York all day doing kirtan. Yeah, and people were really, you know, appreciating it. So I mentioned that to Srila Prabhupada as we were going down there. It'd be nice if we had a kirtan party on a truck or something, you know, so many people. Then Prabhupada said, yes. He said, why the devotees are not doing kirtan? And there was a van in front of us with about 10 devotees in it. So he said, tell them, yeah, I have kirtan. So we sent the message. So they opened up the doors and, you know, started having kirtan. And as we went down into Washington, all the people, they heard, you know, the Hare Krishnas coming down the road, and they were all turning and smiling and waving and dancing, and a lot of them were actually chanting as well when they heard the chanting going past. Prabhupada was very happy. He liked it very much. Then when we got down into the city area, same thing. A lot of the roads were, you know, kind of semi-closed, and people everywhere, you know. And everybody was in a very jubilant mood. So as we went past with our kirtan, I saw on one street corner there were a couple of police, because the police were everywhere. But there were a couple of cops on the street corner, and I saw one of them, he started, you know, dancing a little jig, and, you know, they were waving. So everybody was in a very good mood. It was very nice. So that was July the 4th. But anyway, at the same time, in the morning of July the 4th, the devotees took Srila Prabhupada to the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal in Great Falls Park for his morning walk. Although it's midsummer, he still has a slight chill, and he was well wrapped up in a pullover, chadar, and woolen hat. His respiratory system is quite blocked with mucus, making his voice sometimes thick and husky. So this, again, was another ongoing problem. Too much mucus. And if you listen to some of Prabhupada's tapes, you know, conversations, even lectures, you can hear he's very blocked up a lot of the time. Of course, one of the things that we carried with us was a little brass pot that Prabhupada used as a spittoon. That was very essential. He would keep that under his desk. We'd put half water, and he would continually be coughing up mucus and spitting it out. Old man's disease. Yeah. As the body gets old, then you get too much mucus. You get imbalances in the body. So that was going on. A couple of weeks later, we were in New York. Again, you know, because Prabhupada was having all these cough problems, heavy mucus problems. So the GBC, they were having a meeting during Prabhupada's presence. He didn't attend the meetings, but they had a meeting there, and because we were there for the New York Rath Yatra. That was the very first Rath Yatra in New York. Prabhupada had started the movement in 1966 in New York, and then, you know, of course, the following year they had the first Rath Yatra in San Francisco. And in fact, this morning I was watching that. There's a film clip. If you go on YouTube and you type Hare Krishna 1967, there's a 2.5 minute film clip. We don't know who's put it on, but it's a film clip of the very first San Francisco Rath Yatra. It was just a truck, but it had the deities on the back. And then later on, they built proper Rath carts. Anyway, somehow or another, Rath Yatra became tremendously popular. Prabhupada pushed the devotees to hold Rath Yatras all around the world. And yet by 1976, New York still had not had a Rath Yatra, even though we'd been there 10 years. So then they promised, this year we're going to do it. So Prabhupada had gone there particularly for that first New York Rath Yatra. And of course it was a tremendous success. Three huge chariots Jayananda Prabhu built them, and right down Fifth Avenue. Prabhupada said Fifth Avenue is the most important street in the whole world. So we went right down Fifth Avenue. We ended up in Washington Square Park. They had a huge festival, and it was a tremendous success. Anyway, so because of that, naturally all the devotees in America practically turned up. There are at least 600 devotees that came for that Rath Yatra, and all the GBCs, they also met, and so they had a GBC meeting. That's what GBCs like to do. Whenever there's an opportunity, they have a meeting. So the GBC men also dealt with one extra item on their agenda, Srila Prabhupada himself. concerned about his health, they requested him not to travel or to give classes and to rest in New York until his health improves. Srila Prabhupada modestly accepted their concern for him. He tipped his head and he said, "I have no objection." Then 3 days later, July the 20th, it seems that every time Prabhupada holds a big initiation, so he had an initiation, I think the day before, about 200 devotees were initiated. It seems that every time he holds a big initiation, this was my observation, he becomes afflicted with some kind of physical ailment afterwards. He now has a heavy cold, which is worsening. It was bad enough today to warrant him deciding not to have his usual massage with oils. Instead, he had me give him a dry one so that he would not have to take a bath. So that means his whole body was really chilled and very, very delicate. So no bath. He prepared to depart from the temple by 6 p.m. for the evening flight to London. His GBC and senior men, however, came to petition him to stay in New York and rest until he got his health back. Some suggested that he retire from all travel and engagements for a few months. They said that even the airlines advise against a person traveling with a cold. Air conditioning and pressurized cabins have adverse effects, especially on the ears, which become blocked during the descent. Having a cold makes it very difficult to clear them, and the pressurization brings dizziness and sometimes air sickness. So they tell you, if you have a heavy cold, don't travel, at least on aeroplanes. Prabhupada had a very heavy cold. Everybody was asking him, please don't travel. But his divine grace politely shrugged aside all of their suggestions as he waited by the elevator door. He stepped inside, surrounded by as many sannyasis and GBC men that could fit in there with him, and began the descent. He turned to them, and he said with complete clarity and gravity, "I simply want the benediction, like Arjuna, to fight for Krishna to the last breath." He said it with such deep conviction that we all fell utterly silent in appreciation of his full surrender to the Lord and the great sacrifice that he continues to make in the service of Krishna for ours and the world's benefit. So that was the last word. You know, everybody was trying, and even as they were trying to persuade him to stay, Prabhupada was getting into the elevator to go down and go to the airport. And that was his last comment. So we made that flight, and it was horrendous. You know, Prabhupada had this heavy cold. And as soon as we got on, of course, night flights especially, they must lower the temperature or something in the aeroplanes. And all night long, Prabhupada was just simply lying down and coughing up every few minutes. Heavy, heavy mucus. He was very, very sick. So the overnight flight to London was extremely difficult for Srila Prabhupada. It seems that at night, the airlines lower the cabin temperature. Racked by a heavy cold, Prabhupada spent practically the whole flight lying down, coughing up large amounts of mucus every few minutes. In fact, he hardly moved at all during the 6.5-hour flight. In the morning, as arrival into London neared, the airline served breakfast. Prabhupada tried to eat a little fruit, but he found it very difficult. He was feeling so ill that he called for Gurudas Maharaj, asking him to arrange for a wheelchair for him when he arrived. So for Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was a very self-sufficient, very determined person. And if he could do anything himself, he would do it. He'd rather not take help. But for him to ask for a wheelchair, that meant that it was really, really serious. So the plane touched down at 7:30 a.m., and Gurudas Maharaj immediately disembarked to get a wheelchair, leaving Srila Prabhupada to wait on board. But after only a few minutes' delay, Prabhupada changed his mind about waiting, and he left the plane and began to walk Heathrow Airport's long corridors towards the immigration. He was so ill that he was swaying slightly from side to side, and he had to pause several times to steady himself. I kept right at his side, afraid that he might collapse. But Prabhupada didn't want to stop, and there was nowhere to sit down. Gurudas returned after 5 minutes, informing us that the airport would supply a wheelchair, but only to the plane. So we were already down the corridor. They wouldn't bring the wheelchair down the corridor, but they would only bring it to the plane. So not wanting to go all the way back, Prabhupada simply continued walking. I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't know what the rule and regulation was. They knew there was a problem. And in fact, two policemen joined us, presumably having been informed that there was a potential emergency. They didn't speak to us, but they kept close behind, walking at a respectful but watchful distance, accompanying Prabhupada all the way to the immigration desk. At the counter, there were seats, so Prabhupada sat down, and I went forward with his passport. So then there was a little incident. It was quite funny, actually, when I think about it now. I went forward, and there was this young guy. He must have been just in his early 20s. He was probably the same age as me. I was 25 at this time. So I went forward, and Prabhupada actually, he had an old passport and a new passport that had been bound together. You know, sometimes instead of giving you a new one, they just tack on some extra sections. So Prabhupada's British visa was in the back of the old section, or somewhere in the old section. So I went up to the counter, and I told the man, I said, the visa's in the back section there. So instead of looking at that, he put the passport face down, and then one by one, very slowly, on purpose, he started leafing and looking at each page. So he was just doing it to be arrogant and show me who was the boss. Don't tell me my job, right? So I got so frustrated. You know, Prabhupada was sitting there and the police was standing there. I got so frustrated with this fellow because I just wanted to get out and get Prabhupada to the temple. So I just took the passport back off him. I opened it to the visa and put it straight down in front of him. I said, the visa's there. And he got so agitated, he grabbed his rubber stamp and he shoved it in my face. He said, here, why don't you stamp it too? Go on, stamp it. Like this. I thought. And then the police were looking over and giving him dirty looks. And he looked over, he saw them looking at him, so then he cooled down again, he realized he'd lost it, you know. So anyway, he stamped it, and he started giving it back to me, and he said, here, ain't he the bloke that wrote the Bhagavad Gita? I was amazed, you know, I was thinking, this guy's a demon, you know. And then he said, isn't he the man that wrote the Bhagavad Gita? And I said, how did you know that? I mean, sometimes, you know, you read a book, the author's picture is there, but if you met them in real life, you probably wouldn't recognize them half the time, unless they're really famous. And he recognized Prabhupada from his picture in this Bhagavad Gita. I said, you know, how do you know that? He said, oh, I bought one on Oxford Street. So he met the devotees, somebody sold him a Gita, and he must have read it, or at least he looked at the pictures anyway. So I was just surprised that he would know that. So I thought, you know, maybe this is a chance to redeem himself. So I told him, I said, well, actually, yes. I said, and he's going to be lecturing from the Bhagavad Gita at our place at Lechmore Heath, you know, for the next few days. So if you want to come along, please do. I don't think he did. But anyway, we parted company. Good friends. So anyway, then Prabhupada came out. And leaving the police behind, Prabhupada proceeded through the gate. The local GBC, Jayatirtha Prabhu, Mukunda Das, and Harikesh Swami headed up a large crowd of joyous devotees there to greet Srila Prabhupada. Blissfully unaware of Prabhupada's condition, they stepped forward and draped him with colourful garlands of roses and carnations. Just 2 minutes here. Rohini Nandan Das walked alongside holding an elaborately sequined yellow satin umbrella over Prabhupada's head, and despite his weak condition, Prabhupada received their offerings gracefully with a smile and pranams. I quickly informed Jayatirtha that Prabhupada was very sick and requested him to take us to the manor without delay. He escorted Prabhupada directly to a waiting Rolls Royce, which was owned and driven by one of our Indian Life members, Mr. Patel. With Prabhupada and Jayatirtha in the back, and Harikesh and myself in the front, we set off on the hour-long drive to the manor. After a mere 10 minutes, Prabhupada suddenly asked to stop the car. Pulling up at the roadside, he opened the door and vomited. It was alarming, all the more because it consisted of just thick yellow bile and mucus rather than any food waste. All we could do was just continue on as quickly as possible to get Prabhupada to the manor where he could rest. A few minutes later, I looked around to check on his divine grace, and I was shocked to see Prabhupada was gagging and going through the motions of throwing up without actually doing so. He was gesturing with his hand, moving it in a circular motion from his stomach up to his mouth and then back again. So he was going like this, but nothing was coming out. I shouted to Mr. Patel to stop immediately, and Prabhupada just got the door open in time before vomiting once more. It was all the more distressing because there was nothing that any of us could do to relieve him. Thankfully, we reached the manor without further incident. So then we arrived at the manor. Since Prabhupada's quarters are up on the upper floor, he was faced with a steep climb up the wide wooden staircase. He stood for a minute at the bottom while we quickly procured a chair with the aim of carrying him up on the chair. He actually sat down on the chair, but as I fumbled around trying to coordinate how it should be lifted, with two men holding the legs in front and me holding the back, Prabhupada lost patience. Without a word, he simply stood up, climbed up the steps, and left us behind holding the empty seat. Entering the rooms, he immediately took rest for the remainder of the day. He just went straight to bed. He took no prasadam, no massage, and received no visitors, apart from one Indian devotee, Niranjan Das, who is a young Indian college student, and also one of his oldest disciples here in London, Shiradakshayi Vishnu, who is a middle-aged Indian businessman who had joined in London when the devotees were first starting up. He and his wife, Kirti Madasi, were initiated by Prabhupada in 1969. So that was right at the very beginning of the British Yatra. So those two were there. Prabhupada called them in. They had been sitting out on the lawns, and Prabhupada had seen them through the window and had him brought up. While Prabhupada rested in bed, he discussed with them whether a Gujarati Ayurvedic doctor could be brought. Then Shiradakshayi Vishnu had his son bring from their home in London some Ayurvedic medicine, Chaiwan Prash, which is good for congestion and chest ailments and acts as a general tonic. As well as this, they brought some Ayurvedic cough drops. Niranjan also gave Prabhupada a powdered medicine called Sitapaladi Churna, which he mixed with honey and crushed cardamom into a paste. In addition, we made a hot ginger brew with a little honey for Prabhupada. He requested that we give him these medicines every day, as they seem to have a salutary effect. So if you ever get cold, actually, if you get this Sitapaladi Churna, it's quite effective. We use that in Mayapur a lot. The British weather certainly doesn't seem conducive to Prabhupada's quick recovery. Although it is mid-July and they've had a drought here for the past 2 months, the daytime is barely warm, and it grew surprisingly chilly in the evening. So I'm going to finish at this point because it's time for arati. But we're about halfway through this particular saga, so we'll continue that tomorrow night. Any quick question before we finish? Yeah.
Okay.
So since you've been a devotee, you've become addicted to sugar. And what effect will that have on your teeth? They'll probably all go rotten. The point is that when you eat, you should have a balanced diet. Yeah, we talked about this the other night. You know, alright, we're trying to be transcendental, but your body is a material body and it has to be looked after properly. So you should have a proper balanced diet and look after it. Maintain it nicely. The Prabhupada always insisted, you know, bathe at least once or twice a day, minimum. And, you know, clean yourself, brush your teeth nicely, eat properly, get enough sleep. You know, all these things are essential for maintaining your body so that you can do your service. But if you, you know, somehow or another think that you can neglect your body because you're transcendental, you're doing devotional service, then in the future, then your body will start to react. You know, it'll start to break down perhaps sooner than it ought to. So, you know, yeah, pay attention and look after it properly. I mean, as far as sugar goes, a little sugar, not much. Yeah. We like them. Our devotees, we like gulab jams and halva and all these things, but in moderation. Yeah, not 10, 15, 20, you know, like this. Last question, somebody. Didn't somebody over here? No? You had a question? Yeah, let him ask. Was I present when Prabhupada disappeared? No, I wasn't. The last two, I was there for four of the last 6 weeks in Vrindavan, but I had come back to Australia. I was actually up in New Govardhan at that point. All right, we'll finish and.